Hey, this is Carrie from Wrap Your Head Around Silks. This is the Expecting Arielle's podcast. How's it going, guys? Hope you are doing well. Here in December with Christmas barreling towards us. I hope you are having a great week. Before we get started, I am so excited to announce that coming in 2023 is Level 1 Silks Teacher Training from Wrap Your Head Around Silks. So I'm finally diving in, working on the textbook as we speak. And in spring, we're going to have our first round. So super excited. If you are interested in teacher training by me, there's going to be a link down in the show notes, and you can just let me know by giving me your email address. You'll go into a list so you can hear more about it later. As well, lots of things going on. If you're interested in the 3-part video series for Ariel Rehab, it's free, and it's like a little mini masterclass. So go there to see that. And then, of course, weekly, we have our 60-minute virtual live roll-it-out class that you can also access on the student portal. Take the class as many times as you want during the week and get healthier as you do it. So super excited. So today is an encore presentation of Dr. Janae. I thought I would do this now because we just heard from her last week about getting tubes tied. And I really feel like the C-section lecture she gave at the beginning of the year was just so fantastic. So doing an encore presentation of it in case you missed it or in case you just want to hear Dr. Janae and make your day lighter because she's so funny. There is explicit language in this because she goes off the cuff, but it's so fun. So excited. Let's get started.
So Dr. Janae, how did you, what was your,
you just call me Janae.
Janae?
Okay. Yes. Oh my gosh. Okay. So horrible. I'm like, what? I just drank wine. Oh my God. I'm so excited to talk about C-sections. I'm so particular and anal about how I do mine. I'm like, I can't wait to explain this to somebody.
Really?
I can't wait. I'm excited.
Oh my God. I'm very excited because this is such a mystery. And you know, it's so funny because my population, so this podcast is called the Expecting Arielle's podcast, and it is the nichest niche, whatever. Like no one can niche down farther than I have on this. Like,
I don't think so. I was like, what? She's doing what? That's amazing.
No. So we got a bunch of like ultra fit, motivated type A personalities in this population.
Great. I can't wait.
And the weird thing is that even me, who would be the person to ask, no doctor, I don't know if she was willing or if they're just so time constrained in those 15 to 20 minute appointments that we have.
Yeah.
To tell me how the surgery would actually go.
They well, just, actually 15 to 20 minutes is generous. So yeah, right. Time constrained. Don't even get me started on that. It makes me so mad. I get so mad about it.
Right, because you don't have time with your patients because of insurance and this is how
it's... Yeah, and I want that time. Like you said, just so you can explain stuff to people. I mean, you're getting your stomach cut open, for God's sakes. Like, you probably want to know what's happening.
Yeah, and maybe kind of... And maybe also an emergency. You know, maybe sometimes it's not planned. So, yeah. Basically, like, I've asked Dr. Janae. So, for my audience, I just want to introduce you. This is Dr. Janae Davis. I met her online. I've never met her in person because I haven't been to Ohio in years. But she is an OBGYN. She is my friend and partner, my business partner for the other podcast I do, Greener Grass. She is her OBGYN. So, I'm, you know, jealous because I wish that you were my OBGYN.
I totally can be on call. Listen, just give me a shout.
No, it's not, it's just not the same though. It's not the same, but Dr. Janae Davis, Janae, also works at the hospital that my dad worked at. You know, my dad's a retired cardiologist his whole career. And when I was, you know, growing up in high school and I would be at this hospital all the time. And, you know, this is now 20 some years later, and Janae is now 15 years into her career there. No, not 15 years into your career at Lincoln.
Yes. 15 years. Yes, absolutely.
Wow. Okay.
I got there in 06.
Yeah. Okay. So she's at the hospital that I grew up with, basically. And Kelly brought her on to Greener Grass to talk about private parts and stuff. And I was like, Oh my God, can I have her on to explain to this population exactly, like exactly what yes. they do in a C-section? Because with what we do, our core muscles are like the holy grail.
Yeah, let me tell you, I can't wait to get to talk about a bladder blade trying to get into one of you with tight abdominal muscles that I'm jealous of, by the way. I have like a heavy sex diet, I'm sore the next day, for God's sakes. Like, oh my gosh, you guys are in such good shape.
My muscles are still recovering from being pregnant, honestly. And I did have a C-section, and no one explained to me. So I would love for you to, like, front to back, the woman lays, you know, the woman's on the table, and from yes. there.
I cannot wait to explain it.
Okay.
It's like my favorite. So yeah. Why don't I start explaining it, and then you just interrupt me with, hey, delve more into that.
Okay.
Because just a little bit about me, I'm very particular about I don't know, everything in my entire life. And so doing a C-section, a routine C-section for me, it takes 34 minutes. Like, I literally, it's exactly the same every single time for wow. all these things. Or in residency, when you practice C-sections, you practice all of them like they're a crash C-section, so that whenever that actually has to happen, you're not like, oh my God, what do I do now? So in residency, we practice being able to get a baby out in 1 minute routinely, so that whenever it really does happen, then you're ready for that. But wow. I'm telling you what, right now, people can do C-sections with their eyes closed in the middle of the night, sleeping almost, is how routine it is for us. And so I do want to acknowledge that we do not in the medical field do a good job honoring the fact that, oh my God, my wife is getting ready to get cut open, or my partner is getting ready to get cut open, or my daughter is getting ready to get cut open for the very first time in their entire life. We're like, yeah, we're going to go ahead and go back for a section. I'll see you in a little bit. And you're like, what the F does that mean? And we just walk out, grab a cup of coffee, and act like everybody knows what's going on. So I am happy to take this opportunity to explain it, because, we just don't do a good enough job at it. I'm just going to put it out there. We don't do a good enough job.
Okay, so question, Dr. Janae. Yeah. Janae, sorry. I got to, like, get myself out of it. Does everyone across the world get trained to do a C-section in the same fashion?
Are we being honest, or am I supposed to say the appropriate answer?
Sorry?
Are we being honest, or am I supposed to say the PC answer?
No, be honest.
Hell no. And hell no, they don't get trained to do it the same way. And let me just tell you, how do I say this in a good way? You know how there's some people who are painters, and then you walk in their house and you're like, mother of pearl, this house is immaculate. Every corner is exactly like, you don't even know why it looks so good, but you walk in there and it's just gorgeous, and they're a painter. And then you walk in another house and they're a painter, but you can see all the strokes in it. And you can see all the green tape that they rip off. They didn't let it dry long enough, so they pulled off a little bit on the edge of the green tape. Like, it's just not quite as crisp. That's exactly how surgeons are.
Okay,
just
but
because
is it like,
you went through residency training doesn't mean that you're as good as somebody else.
Is it messy is it messy and like versus perfect, or is it like, oh, they cut in a completely different place?
No, everybody cuts in the same-ish place.
Okay.
But not everybody, for example, if you had a section in the past, you should have a scar, so we should use your same scar, right? But that first scar that goes on there, I'm anal about it. So we prep you, we lay you down. But if you think about it in your mind, there are several things that happen with your anatomy with a baby that's stretching your entire abdomen out that don't make it look the same when a baby's in versus a baby out. So I get a ruler out, I get a marker out, I make my line first, I go back by your feet and I stand down there and I look. And of course we have to tip you off to one side, so your belly shifted to one side, but you get that linea nigra, you get that increase in melanin right down the middle of your abdomen.
Mm-hmm.
That you want to line that up right. Sometimes when we take the baby out and we go to put your skin back together, it doesn't come together in the same spot. So people look like they have a zigzag, unless you take an extra few seconds, guys, and put it right back together where it's supposed to be. So there's a lot of little minute things, intermittent things that you can do that will either make it look like you painted it like Picasso, or you painted it like Joe from Lowe's. I don't know how to say that. Yeah, like right. you need to give a F, you know? Like, there's a midline, and then you need to make sure that the incision is equal on both sides. Well, you don't have to do that, but it looks better, right? And if you take a baby, when the baby's on the inside, I think some people don't recognize, your skin is completely stretched in a way that it looks like it was even when you started. But when you're done, now it's not, because the baby's out of it. So there's some things that look different from when we started than when you finish.
Okay.
Just because the baby's out of there. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
So I use a marker and say, okay, mama, I'm getting ready to draw on your belly. Get ready to make sure this is even. And then I go stand down there and then I mark it out and do all these things because I just have OCD, which I think I told you about.
No, I think your patients probably appreciate that.
OCD. Yeah. Yeah, and being honest, nobody gives a crap how good my uterus looks on the inside of their belly. All they care about is how good it looked on the outside of their belly, right? Yeah. So I could do an awesome job on the inside and be like, mother blanks, did you see how good I closed that uterus? You don't care about that. All you really care about is what does it look like on the outside? So that's what we have to focus on when we're ending, you know, while we're in the middle of patting ourselves on the back for doing such an amazing job. You got to finish, you know, you got to take the extra time to make sure that the staples are in correctly or the sutures are in correctly or whatever it is. And that sometimes takes a little bit of extra time and people deserve that time. You know, that's part of your external body, like that affects people's self-image. So you need to do that.
Okay. So let's just say, okay, so there's emergency C-sections, there's scheduled C-sections, and then everything else in between.
Yep, you're right.
Okay, so let's just say it's not like dire emergency. No one's life is in danger. They're in there, they get anesthesia, and then go for it.
The first part is the anesthesia. Let's just chat just for 2 seconds about that so we're all clear. Technically, in your mind, you're thinking this should last anywhere from a half an hour to an hour. I'm just roughballing it. Mine's 34 minutes. Some people are 20 minutes, some people are an hour and a half. It's just when we're roughballing it. When you get a spinal anesthesia, it's where they put one shot of anesthesia that's gonna keep you numb for about 2 hours. The epidural is where we leave a catheter inside there so that we can keep pumping medicine in you to keep you comfortable for even longer. But when somebody has to get put under general anesthesia, like, crap, we tried to get her numb and it didn't work. Crap, we tried again. I pinched her and she still feels it. We have to put you under general anesthesia. General anesthesia turns that scenario directly into the equivalent of an emergency.
Okay.
Because when we do it, we don't want any of that inhalation agent or the IV medication that we gave you through your IV to go to the baby. So you are accosted with the task of making sure you get that baby out and clamp that cord in about a minute so that none of that anesthesia medication that went to the mom to put the mom to sleep puts the baby to sleep.
Wow.
Does that make sense?
Okay, yeah.
So some people get mad, and here's something for me to explain. How about please take a second, everybody, to stop getting mad all the time about stuff that doesn't go exactly your way if there's a medical reason why we're doing it. If we're putting somebody to sleep, no. Under no uncertain circumstances is somebody's support person going to be in the room with them. Mm. It is a crash section. So people are like, what do you mean I can't be in there? I am sorry. But even though most of labor and delivery is kicks and giggles and like, oh my gosh, we have a baby, we are performing major abdominal surgery on people. And by the way, this could be really a situation that we don't need someone hooping and hollering and acting a hot mess. And I need extra hands up at the head of the bed with the anesthesia. If I'm having trouble getting her intubated, I might need cricoid pressure, which is where you need an extra set of hands to push on someone's neck so that we can get the intubation tube in. Because once you push that drug to put the mom to sleep and she goes to sleep, I have seconds to be able to get the tube down her throat. There's a lot that goes into that. And as soon as that tube is in and they pull the stylet out of the tube, they pick whatever our code word is for go. So it's either cut or go, or every hospital has their own word that is go. And the surgeon is sitting there with her knife handle on the skin with complete focus, waiting to hear that word so that within 1 minute they can get this child out. So no, you can't come in there in the middle of that. And then you have to have a pediatrician in there or a nurse practitioner who's going to be able to take care of the baby in case we can't get the baby out that quick. Right? Like, what if it doesn't go like it was supposed to go and now my baby's compromised? Mm-hmm. So there's a whole lot that goes into it. We're not just trying to be a bunch of assholes. Like, there's a reason why you can't. So I think that's one of the frustrating things for me as a surgeon is sometimes even when you explain that to people, like they really think and people think, oh, she's having a baby today and it's no big deal. But it's no big deal till it is, right? And then it's life and death. And we take that really serious. So that's my little speech on the anesthesia.
Janae, okay. I'm obsessed with you. You're like, I'm not an asshole, but I love it. Okay. Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And I do want to say also, like, we as a physician need to take time. And I've seen it a million times, and I probably haven't done the best all every time, but I really try to be able to look at someone in the face and say, I know this is so scary, and acknowledge that the support person and the patient are really nervous not to have someone with them. I know you're really scared. We're going to take really good care of her. We're going to do the best we can for her. And as soon as the baby's out, I send somebody out to tell the family the baby's out and it's fine, so that they're not sitting there for the rest of my 20 minutes or whatever it is, worrying, oh my God, you know, what's happening. But it is necessary, and it's not just to be a jerk about it. It is necessary. So when we ask people to leave or ask people to go and people get, you know, funky about it, you know, I've had to call security on people before because I don't have time for this shit. Like, I'm trying to, like, save lives. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what to tell you. Like, I get it. It looks good on ER or what's that show that I never got to watch that was all about the residents? Grey's Anatomy.
Grey's Anatomy. Here,
but in real life. Like, that is not how it really happens. So, yeah.
Okay.
So, anyway. Okay, scheduled C-section. That's the one you were talking about?
Sure.
What's from start to finish? Okay, got it. So, scheduled C-section. You should have signed all your consents in the office. Now that we have COVID, everybody's hospital has like a different policy. You might have to get swabbed for COVID when you're actually in the hospital, or you might get swabbed 3 days before or a week before, whatever the policy is. They're going to tell you, okay, I can't wait. We're going to pick your baby's birthday. And we look around and we do that about 39 weeks. It has to be at least 39 weeks because per ACOG, which is the American Congress of Obstetrics and Gynecology, we want to make sure that the lungs are mature. Back a million years ago, whenever we had a lot more autonomy within the obstetrics field, we used to just decide, you know what, I'm delivering, I don't know, 50 babies this month, but I really want to go golfing. So if you're over 37 weeks, I'm just going to schedule you for all this stuff so that I can go golfing. Well, excuse me, we had some babies that ended up in the nursery because their lungs weren't mature yet. So ACOG put some standards on when it is we're allowed to let people have babies and not have babies based on lung maturity and the chances that if we take your baby out before it's ready, i.e. you started labor, if we take your baby out, how concerned are we that your baby's lungs aren't mature? So I've had people come to me from other states who are like, well, my other doctor let me have my C-section at 37 and a half weeks. And I'm like, chick, I'm just telling you, this is the standard. They went against medical standards, so I'm sorry that that's what happened. And most of the time it's fine, but it isn't all the time. And it's not worth sending a baby to the NICU, getting tubed, because you wanted to have your baby out on a Tuesday and I wanted to go golfing. So it needs to be or should be per ACOG 39 weeks. And anybody who does it before then is technically operating outside a guideline, but whatever. Just throwing that in there. So I'll quit getting fussed at. So we would say, okay, you're going to come in 2 hours before your C-section. And then that gives anesthesia time to have a conversation with you about, do you have a history of scoliosis? Does anyone in your family have any trouble with anesthesia? I.e., did they have malignant hyperthermia? Like somebody got put to sleep and then had a big reaction when they were asleep. Have you ever had a bleeding disorder? Has anyone in your family ever had a bleeding disorder? Because we certainly don't want to poke into your back, right? If you have bleeding problems and put a big clot in the middle of your back and increase your risk for spinal injury, things like that. And then you, of course, couldn't have eaten or drank anything for 8 hours. So they're going to give you some Bisitra or some other kind of neutralizing agent that you're going to drink before you go back for that cesarean section so that you neutralize all stomach acid in your stomach. And when I say all stomach acid, I mean you can't chew a flipping piece of gum. You cannot put a Tic Tac into your mouth because you're trying to be all fresh and minty and so fresh and so clean in the morning. Do not put one thing into your mouth or you will activate gastric acid. And then if you are in a C-section, you're like pretty much most everybody, you're going to start puking and then you're going to puke stomach acid up into your mouth and suck it back down into your lungs and end up with pneumonitis. So I've had people, anesthesia has canceled people because they, you know, I just had a little quick sip of coffee. It's not worth it. It's an elective case. We don't want your stomach, you essentially to end up with the consequence of what happened. It's the consequence of you sucking gastric stuff back down into your lungs is the problem. It's not that I can't get your surgery done. So I think people need to take that really serious. When they say don't eat or drink, we mean, honest to God, don't eat or drink or you're canceled.
Janae, so there's that. Like, I'm trying to like not mess up the recording because this, with Zoom, like I can't really talk over you as easily because it's harder to edit later, but I'm laughing underneath my breath.
She's like, this bitch is crazy. She over here canceling people's surgery over a Tic Tac. That's right. Over a Tic Tac.
I'm trying to like not like, you know, Kelly's so funny because when she does a podcast, she doesn't think of any of these, but I'm thinking about my editing work that happens the next week. Right.
Right.
So like, I'm trying to make it super clean and I'm like trying to be like all quiet over here and I'm like biting myself. I'm like, oh my God, Carrie, don't laugh on the recording.
Well, it's so funny. And I literally think to myself, I know it sounds really stupid and people think we're just being bitches. But I swear to God, I have, because I've been doing this for 20 years, I have seen people end up in the intensive care unit intubated with lung injury from sucking gastric stuff back in their lungs. Like, it happens. And in the physiology of pregnancy, which almost every pregnant woman knows, your gastric emptying is so slowed whenever you're pregnant. Like, there's hormones that make your system not act the same that they act when you're not pregnant. Like, I had one lady who had 7 o'clock p.m., had green beans or something. We ended up having to crash section her at like 5 in the morning, and she yacked up full, whole green beans from 10 hours before. I'm like, this is, first of all, I hate puke, just so you know. It's abso-fucking disgusting. Vomit to me is so disgusting. But she was vomiting whole green beans. I'm like, mother of pearl, she ate this dinner at 7 o'clock at night. So yeah, we take it real serious, you know. So
Janae, if you don't like puke, shouldn't have you become like a lawyer or something?
I hate it. I hate it. And you know what else I hate? Respiratory secretions. To hear that tube come out. Honest to God, I'm like, yeah, yo, I'm about to step out, y'all. About to step out. Okay, thanks, everybody. And I just gotta go. I gotta go.
Oh, my God. This
yeah, I gotta go. There's a lot of shit I can deal with, but I just don't like respiratory secretions, okay? And I'm just going to put that out there. There you go.
Okay. All right, so.
The second yet. I'm so sorry.
No. I'm here for it. So what's next?
We do all that, and anesthesia comes to you. Then somebody comes and puts your IV in, and we have to give you a bolus of 1,000 cc's of fluid at least, so that you don't drop your blood pressure when we put your spinal in. Why do I have to come in 2 hours early? Bitch, because I got to make sure you don't pass out when I put this spinal in here, okay? We got a lot to do. So we put this IV in, and you get a whole liter of fluid. Then hopefully they let you put your catheter in when you're numb. We say, okay, any other, give everybody hugs and kisses. Give everybody hugs and kisses. And then we take the mom back to this C-section room to get her ready. Until that mom is draped and numb, and we know for sure they're numb, we don't, in my hospital particularly, we don't let the partner come back. We don't let the support person come back.
Okay.
Until like you're draped and you know. It's because we're dealing with stuff trying to be sterile. You know, the nursery people are over trying to get their stuff together. Anesthesia might have an extra helper with them. The surgery tech is counting all the instruments and making sure that's all right. We're doing timeouts. We're making sure that we have everything we need. So we just don't need extra people in there gawking around, being in the way, frankly. I don't know how else to say it. So once you get your spinal in, so you'll go back to the C-section room. They'll say, okay, hop up on this bed. And then you hunker over, and we want you to push your back out, like arch like a mad cat, push your back out so they can feel your spine. They'll put your spine, wash your back off really good, put your spinal in, and probably within a few minutes, your legs are going to start feeling heavy. But say, okay, mama, no worries. We'll lay you back. We'll put two arm boards out that make you look like your arms are directly out from your sides. We'll strap them down because I don't need you touching sterile stuff. And then we'll wash your belt, put your catheter in and wash your belly off.
Okay.
That's pretty much the start of it. That's how everything goes.
Okay.
After your belly is washed off, the doc will come in typically, unless they're nosy nilly like Janae Davis. I'm like, hey, what are we doing in here, y'all? Because I always want to see what's going on. And thank you very much. I have to set my music because I cannot do surgery without music. It is typically Mariah Carey or Bruno Mars. Just saying. Or I tell mama, hey mama, I totally can't do surgery without music. So if you would like to bring some Pandora, you can listen to whatever you want. But this diva right here, don't do stuff in the quiet. Thanks. So we set them.
All right.
Yep. And then we put the drape on. There's a big blue drape that goes on, and that's sterile for everything. There's a plastic hole in the middle where we're actually going to cut. And then some drapes and some drapes not have a area in the front that the mom, you could kind of take the flap and make it go down, but it still has clear plastic on it so that you could see through there to show mom baby.
Okay.
That makes sense. Not all drapes have that. It just depends on which hospital you're at and what it is they're comfortable with. But we put that drape on, and then we use a little clamp to pinch all on mommy's belly to make sure, hey, is she feeling anything? If she's feeling that or she can move her legs, we wait. Like, we have to wait. We don't want to accost a person, right? We want to make sure they're good and numb. And if they never get numb, they can either replace the spinal or we have to do the general anesthesia like we talked about.
Okay.
Yeah. And once they're numb, we'll say, okay, dad or partner can come in. They sit by mom on the non-sterile side of the drape, and then we would begin. Go. Questions. Do it.
Okay.
Go.
Okay. No, I want to hear about the cutting.
Yeah. I'm all about it. I'm all about the cutting. Okay. So the cutting, you want to hear all the layers? You want to hear every single thing?
Yes.
Because I'm down for it.
Yes, okay. Every layer.
Perfect. So after you decide where it is you're going to cut, you use a scalpel blade to cut through skin. Everybody's got the same layers. That's what I want to emphasize. Everybody has the same exact layers. They're just in different amounts, if that makes any sense.
Yes.
Everybody has skin, a layer of fat, it's called the subcutaneous layer, a fascial layer, which is a hard, like a tissue that holds your bowels in. There's muscle. There's peritoneum, which is like saran wrap. Then you're inside the belly, and there's your uterus. Everybody has that. Skin, fat, fascia, muscle, peritoneum, inside the belly. Everybody's
okay.
got it.
Okay.
If you're a person who's really heavy, then that layer of fat is very thick, and it takes a lot to get through. And guess what? If you're going to grow extra tissue in certain layers, guess what happens to it? It gets blood vessels in it. So it bleeds easier, right?
Oh, okay.
It's harder to get through. And if you think about it as being like a piece of fat, like think about a piece of steak that you had, when you touch it for a long time, your hands get greasy, right? So things are more slippery, and it is more difficult to do a C-section on someone who's heavier than somebody who's not. So it's not from a judgment standpoint that people say, oh man, I don't want to do, or this is going to be harder or better. It is harder because everything that you're doing is more obstructed. Your view is more obstructed. You can't see it as well. Things are more slippery. You have to use kind of different techniques. But that's pretty much what happens. So you use a scalpel, you go through the skin, and then you're into the fat layer. You can use an electric cautery, which has a burning thing. It almost looks like a pencil.
Okay.
It's called a Bowie. And you can use that to cut through all the fat until you get to the fascia, or you can use a scalpel blade. Technically, if you use the scalpel blade, you're going to cut through vessels. If you use the Bovie cautery, then you're going to burn through vessels, which means you get less bleeding.
Okay.
So once you get to the fascial layer, which is literally looks like a white sheet of paper, and I always, when I'm trying to teach medical students, I say, okay, what I want you to think about as far as the fascia is think of it like a piece of steak that you get from the store upside down. So there's the styrofoam, and then there's the steak. And then there's the saran wrap over top of that, right? That's how you get your steak at the store.
Mm-hmm.
If you turn that upside down, then it's styrofoam, meat, saran wrap, right?
Yeah.
The fascia is the styrofoam.
Okay.
The meat is your muscle that literally is directly below that. And then that shiny tissue I told you, this peritoneum is the saran wrap.
Okay.
And that's literally it. You go through skin, fat, upside down steak, which is fascia, meat, peritoneum, and then you're into the belly. Now, people have a misnomer that we're going around cutting people's muscles. That is not true. You get a diastasis when you're pregnant that basically separates the rectus muscles right in the middle so yes. that you can have you stretch your belly out. Well, we don't cut through your rectus muscles. So when people are of core strength like you, it's actually a lot harder for us. And we do not tell people, oh, stop doing sit-ups, stop doing all this stuff when you're pregnant. We don't tell people to do that because we want you to be in good shape and to feel good and healthy and be able to, if you're in the middle of practicing for your marathon, go for it. You know, you're not allowed to do plyometrics when you're pregnant, so we're not shearing off people's placentas, but you're allowed to go do what you want to do. Well, in patients who have really strong abdominal muscles, when we cut through that fascia and we're staring at your muscle, we have to find the midline of your muscle with our finger, put our finger in there, and then just separate it with our finger. Mother of God. People that are in good shape, I'm like, mother of God, this is tight as shit. Like you're pulling on these muscles, trying to like figure out how to get them apart. But we do not take scissors and cut people's muscles. We do not burn through people's muscles. We do not do anything. We just separate it enough to get a kid out of it. That's it.
Okay, so you're separating and you're not using scissors. So you're kind of tearing along that linea alba. Basically.
That is, and it's dead space. Like it doesn't tear as in there's vessels there. There's a natural separation of that space. So once you find the midline with your finger and you run your finger up and down, it separates on its own. Those muscles are separate.
So why is it that everybody believes that their muscles are getting cut open?
Because they can't figure out how to get them tight again. And so they want to say, I cut them.
Is that really? I think it's also just like an assumption.
Yeah, but no, nobody's cutting any muscles. That's called a Maillard incision. We do that in cancer surgery, but nobody's cutting anybody's rectus muscle. It bleeds like hell. Like it's really hard to stitch. You think about if you were trying to put suture through a steak, like it just tears through it. There's no good nothing to it. Like if you were trying to stitch filet, that's kind of what it's like. You know, it's like, it's a hot mess. So, and that's it's a voluntary muscle. Like when you touch it with a Bovie, it'll contract. Like, right, when I touch it with a Bovie, if I wanted to, it'll make the woman feel like she's having a sit-up, like she's doing a sit-up. Oh. It's super funny. I think it's funny. But yeah, all the point is trying to separate it enough to try to get this bladder blade in so that we can get this baby out of it. That's the only thing we're doing.
Okay, so you separate the rectus abdominis, and then there's the perineum there. So
Peritoneum. Peritoneum. Perineum is the space between your vagina and your bum.
Oh, that's right. Why are those words so similar?
Why are they so similar? I don't, girl, right? I think they ran out of words when they were like, what is, we call this? We ran out of words. Let's just make it kind of like the other word.
Kind of like the other one. So, but you're cutting through the uterus then too.
No, so they're separate spaces. So you did skin, fat, fascia, separate the muscle, take your finger and poke it through your saran wrap of the peritoneum. And then you put your fingers in there and you literally say, okay, mommy, you're gonna feel pressure. And the person across from you and you, if you pretend like you're looking at a hole as big as, I don't know, if you put your thumb and index finger together and made a circle, you put your little my little four fingers into that hole, and the person across from me puts their four fingers, and we literally lean backwards until that separates open. We just say, ready, and stretch, and we literally manually stretch open your abdomen.
Whoa.
Like, lean my weight back, and they lean their weight back.
And you're pulling, like, on each side of the woman, like?
Yeah.
Okay.
Correct. Right side and left side, and we lean back so that it separates tissue in the plane that is of the least resistance. If we separate it in the plane that's the least resistance, it means that you have the least number of blood vessels that are there, so it'll heal better. So that's why we do it.
Okay, so I'm still having trouble picturing this. So you pull, and you're stretching it out. Okay, what's next then?
So once I stretched it, now it's about the size of if you put your two hands together, middle finger to thumb, middle finger, thumb to thumb, that's about how big the hole is now.
Okay.
Okay. Then you're going to take something called a bladder blade. A bladder blade is essentially just a big retractor, a metal that is has like an L shape on it. And that is to put, how do I say it? We're going to put that where the baby's head is, to keep your bladder down off of your uterus. Your uterus shares a same common peritoneum with the bladder. It's on the bottom half of your uterus.
Okay.
So you can injure your bladder if you're not high enough up when you make your incision into your uterus. If you could literally just cut the top of your bladder off.
Oh, geez.
Right? You could just be like, oh, darn it. I didn't really know that the bladder was right. So let me just cut. Oh, damn it. I'm looking right at the Foley balloon because I effing cut into your bladder. So it is very important that you have good visualization down there. So when you go to take this metal, almost like a rake, like a hoe, looks like a metal hoe almost. Okay. And it's probably, I'd say 4 to 6 centimeters wide. That's about how wide an average bladder blade is. And you put that in there and kind of rake back, so that you can pull the bladder down out of the way and you can have good visualization of the entire lower portion of the uterus.
Okay.
The entire lower portion, so that I can see where does the bladder really meet the uterus, so that when I make my incision to get my baby out, I'm 100% sure that I'm above that space.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I don't want to cut the bladder. So probably 4 centimeters up from the vagina is where the bladder meets contiguous with the uterus. And so we want to be above that.
Okay.
I typically want to know which way my baby's facing. So I'll take my hand at this point, slip it into that round hole that's as big as middle finger, thumb to thumb, and put my entire hand into your belly and reach on the top of your uterus to find where my butt is for my baby and where the feet are for my baby, if I have a vertex baby, so that I know when I get ready to push on mom's belly to get the baby out where I'm pushing. There's no point pushing on feet. I need to push on the bum of the baby.
Oh, my God. My mind is blown. Like, I had no idea you're going to say it. Like, I don't know what I thought you were going to say. So,
correct.
Have you broken the water already?
No, we haven't even gotten into the uterus yet.
No. Okay, so you don't do that. Okay, so there's all the fluid still in there.
Everything. You're just staring at a muscle, a uterus that is just a muscle that looks red, and you're trying to make sure you don't cut through somebody's bladder. So you're identifying your anatomy appropriately with the bladder blade, this big metal hoe that holds that back so I can see it. And then I say, okay, I'm going to go above that. But I stick my hand in there to make sure that I know where I'm at. Now, your general population listening to this, it's not a issue because your BMI is probably on the lower side. If you have somebody whose BMI is 50, for example, when you look at their abdomen, you can't tell where the baby is. right? That's why it's important to put your hand inside there so you know where to push. If you have somebody whose BMI is 50, for example, and you're just looking at flat space, when you go to try to push the baby out, the uterus inside the abdomen is just shifting all over the place. You might not be able to identify where to put pressure to get the baby out.
So you're actually sliding your hand between the peritoneum and the uterus and kind of like...
The peritoneum I went into and broke open like saran wrap, and there's a hole in my peritoneum. That's that hole.
Okay. I still am saying the wrong thing, but so you're like massaging this round fluid filled uterus with your hand, basically trying to find the bump.
I shove my whole hand up and probably up to about 7 inches past my wrist.
Wow.
Yes. I say, okay, mama, you're going to feel some pressure. And then I go and put my hand in there. Yeah.
And you find the baby's bum. Okay.
Find the baby's bum. And I'll say, hey, to my assistant, it's on the right or it's on the left or here it is. You know, especially if a baby's sitting kind of funny and you can't, they wouldn't be able to know that I tell them where we're going to put pressure.
Okay. Go ahead. My mind's blown. Go ahead.
Yep. I know. Right. So then you're staring at this uterus. One thing that you care about, well, one thing that your physician cares about that you probably don't care about is where is your placenta? If you think about that uterus as a big round ball of muscle muck, inside that ball of muscle muck, there's a flat pancake patty of placenta. It's either in the front, on the top, or in the bottom of your uterus. It's one of those places. If it's in the back of your uterus, it's sitting to the back where I wouldn't have to cut through it to get to the baby. Does that make sense?
But usually, when it's in the back, that's not very common, right?
Oh, it doesn't matter. Like, they just go wherever they're going
to
go.
Okay, mine was like, low-lying, so I had previa. So mine was really close to the opening, and it was a problem. So I know a lot about that. But, so basically...
Even if it was a previa, it's... Previa, anterior, previa, posterior, because usually a low lying is low lying in one direction or the other.
Sure. Okay.
So if it's to the posterior, even if it's a previa, you're not worried about cutting through it to get to the baby because it's in the back of the uterus. But if it's an anterior placenta, which means to the front of the uterus, then it's then it's uterus muscle, placenta, and then baby. So when you go to cut through the placenta, through the uterus, you're getting ready to hit a big spongy bunch of nothing but blood filled placenta. And then a baby. So that's why your doc cares about where your placenta is.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. So we're looking. We're going to assume for all intents and purposes that this placenta is in the back. Thank you, sweet baby. It's in the back. So we go and make our incision transversely, which means side to side. We make an incision with a scalpel really lightly. And we do it multiple times. Light, 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 light. And after every one of those swipes, I take my other finger and rub across it to see how close am I to getting through this uterus. How close am I? Swipe, finger, swipe, finger, so that I don't cut a baby. Like, some people have a really thick uterus and some people have a thin uterus, but you don't want to cut somebody's baby. So we're doing cell layer, cell layer, cell layer, cell layer with our scalpel blade so that once it gets so thin, we put the scalpel blade down and then use our blunt finger and just poke through your uterus then so that the and get cut.
So you're like doing a perforated piece of paper type of thing.
Like a perforated piece of paper. Yep. Poke through it. And then you take your two fingers and you stretch it with your fingers so that you can stretch it out. And then you're staring at probably, if it's a scheduled C-section, a baby's ear. And you're like, oh my gosh, look at that little baby ear. And then you tell mom, okay, mom, you're going to feel some pressure. Then we have to talk about getting this head out, right? Now, if somebody came in for a scheduled C-section and they didn't push, the baby's not engaged in the pelvis, they just came in, hey, it was Tuesday the 12th, you told me to show up, I did, no contractions, everything is going perfect, that baby should not be well engaged. It shouldn't be far down by what? Ding, 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 the bladder. That's what we care about. Like, you don't want your baby's head to be all the way half out your vagina while I have to take my hand from inside your abdomen and try to pull its head back up through this C-section incision. That's what happens whenever we have, like, after you labored for a long time and pushed for a long time. That's a whole different scenario. When people come in for a scheduled section, everybody's in a great mood. We're like, it's going to be great. So you make your incision, you poke, you stretch, you take your hand. I am right-handed, but I always stand on the right side of the patient. So it's my right hand that goes into the pelvis. You gently slide your hand beyond that incision, you cup around the baby's top of the baby's head and you come up to the incision and you lift the baby's head up out of the incision. Then you, once it's up out of the incision, you tell your partner, hey, I need you to push now. They push on wherever you told them that the baby's bum bum is.
Okay.
They push on and it pops out like a pimple. You're like, mother of God, it's another baby. And I still, honest to God, I'm like, mother of God, there was an effing number other person in this person. I can't believe it still has been 20 years. I'm like, that is amazing.
So oh for a moment, the baby is just like alien, like just head out of the
hole. Head out. And you can leave it like that for as long as you want. Because guess what? It doesn't need any air. It's attached to an umbilical cord. So that's one thing that people get worked up about. They'll be like, oh my God, so come forever, get the baby out. I'm like, the baby's attached to umbilical cord. It's not like they're holding their breath in there. This is totally fine. And it's always better to take time so that you're not causing trauma to the baby. You know, like sometimes they'll turn their head sideways. Sometimes once you poke into the uterus and all that fluid comes out, it makes the baby shift in the mom's belly because the fluid came out like a wave and the baby's kind of shifted around and they're funny. And so you need to take your time to be able to get the baby positioned appropriately. And then you can lift the baby's head out of the incision and push the baby out. Now, that at that point, only then is when I say, okay, anesthesia, you can lower that drape so that mom and dad or mom and partner, whoever it is, support person, can see the baby through the plastic. I do not allow people to open that up and see what's happening the entire time. And the reason why is because it looks horrifically barbaric sometimes, the things that we're doing to try to manipulate the baby to get them out. Or it is barbaric because the baby's stuck or in some type of distress or there was some bleeding or the cord is in the way or whatever else is happening and someone's trying to do surgery and really do the part that matters. Once the baby's out and everything's fine, great, let's look at that and everybody calm down. But I've had dads stand up and pass directly out because they stood up to try to look over the drape.
Wow.
And then we have people who have to go deal with a passed out person or somebody over there puking, which what is going to happen with that? Janae Davis is going to start puking because you were puking. Partner over there. I'm like, really? This is what I got to deal with right now? Or we've had nurses have to come in literally 2 feet, pull a dad out around the nursery people and drag him out because he passed out cold. Then we have to call a code assist for somebody to come get this dad, take him downstairs. It's just it's a hot mess. You know, and so people say, you know, intrinsically, they're like, I want to experience this, that, and the other. And I get that. I truly do. But I think what people don't get sometimes is this is major surgery and it don't always go good. And so while we take for granted that this is just going to be a routine thing that we do, it doesn't always go like that. So no, you don't. It's not McDonald's, right? Like we're really doing something here. And as long as everything goes good, it's fine until it isn't.
Right.
And when it is, it can go bad and people don't get that. So, and I unfortunately have been in enough situations that it went bad and it just was bad. So I'm pretty like, no, I'll be able to let you stand up or look at through this plastic when I get this baby out and then you can look at it for as long as you want to, and then we'll clamp cords and go.
Well, Janae, I don't feel like I have anything, like I don't have anything that's similar to that, but it resonates with me because as an aerial teacher, I've seen people fall, right?
Yeah.
I've seen people injure themselves and fall and dislocate shoulders and dislocate knees. And so when somebody comes in kind of like, it's a party.
Yeah.
I don't have that attitude because I've seen it go the opposite direction. So it resonates with me when you say that because I'm like, it's fun until it's really not fun. And then it's really serious. Not.
And we do really try to make it fun. Like I always am like, oh my gosh, happy birthday party, guys. This is going to be great. Have my music on. Oh my gosh, mom. I always look over the drape. Last day, just you guys together. You know, I make a thing. But when I'm on the other side of the drape, it's the business. You know, like the reason why it takes me 34 minutes is because I do exactly the same thing every single time. Number one, so that my team knows what it is I'm going to ask for and request next, what instrument I'm using next. But if I went in there changing my mind every 5 seconds, how can they know what to hand me next so that we can be successful as a team together to take best care of mom and baby. Like that's why I'm so sensitive about it being exactly the same way every single time, because it just needs to be for everyone's comfort level. And then again, when it is an emergency, it's exactly the same every single time, except super effing fast.
I remember when they were starting to like make me drowsy because I was kind of like half sedated during mine because I had other stuff going on. My surgeon had like this rhyming poem situation going on where like each person would say a word and the next word would be the same. Like
what?
like one would say Delta, the next one would say, you know, like they had like this pattern where they would repeat like the same.
Oh, their instruments. Like when they were asking for instruments?
No, like in a circle, like she'd say something, the next person would say something, the next person would say the next thing. Like I'm sure they did the exact same thing every single time.
Again, probably.
I was out of it, so I don't know what they were saying, but it sounded like clockwork, basically.
I love that. If it was clockwork, I absolutely love that.
Yeah. So, okay. Baby's out, but cord is still attached. Yeah.
Cord is attached. So we're going to, new recommendations, leave the cord for a term baby for at least 30 seconds, for a preterm baby for a minute. Some people have their personal choice. They want it to be left on for longer till it quits pulsating, whatever it is. Well, either way, we just clamp it after a certain amount of designated time, or if mom tells us they want a certain amount of time. But you can keep the plastic open so that they can touch the baby's face through the plastic, take pictures, do whatever it is you want to do. And then on, because the baby by that point is kind of sitting on mom's chest, right? Because we pulled it out of the belly onto up towards the chest.
Okay.
Then we take the regular clamp. We clamp the other spot in the middle, cut it, and take it off to the nursery people who would be directly beside mom and support person. Usually, well, depending on how your OR is set up, usually off to the mom's left side.
Okay. For the baby to get cleaned up and checked and weighed and everything.
Well, not now. Nowadays, we really work hard to do skin to skin immediately.
Okay.
And relatch babies. So in my particular hospital, and I think a lot of hospitals are going to this, like as long as mom is okay and baby's okay, we try to skin to skin the mom and baby, even though I'm not done with my C-section. So we will take the baby and put on mom's chest immediately underneath the C-section drape.
Okay. I that's wonderful to hear that hospitals have changed to that, because I know most of the women I know prefer that. They want that.
Yeah. Now, if you were so sedated that you wouldn't be able to, you know, participate in that, then we would give the baby to the support person. If you were knocked all the way out in a general, a lot of times we take the baby out and let the support person skin to skin in the recovery room until you're done. It just depends on the hospital policy, but I think most are going to try to do immediate skin to skin, which means don't stimulate the baby with a bath. Don't stimulate the baby putting it on a cold scale. Don't do anything to the baby that's too disruptive, except wipe it off, make sure vitals and Apgars are okay, and put it back on mom. And because really transitioning for babies is easiest with mom anyway.
When did that change?
For our hospital, 4 years ago, probably.
Okay.
But nationally, the trend has been to try to do that for years and years and years.
Okay. So what's your second half of the football game?
Second half of the football game is essentially the whole thing exactly backwards. So once your baby's cord is clamped, the cord is still attached to the placenta, which is still attached inside your uterus. So it looks like a snake nose coming out of a floppy, upside down, huge, flat red pear.
Wait, go back. Wait, what?
Okay. Yeah, because you cut the cord, but the cord's still attached to the placenta, and the placenta is still inside the uterus, right?
Okay.
So you just have an abdominal incision with a cord sticking out of it.
Okay.
So we have to go get that placenta out. So we take the cord, and we follow it with our hand into the uterus, and the uterus that used to be all the way up to my ribs, I can't even breathe, is now down to below your belly button.
Okay.
You take the cord, and you pull on it, so that you can, and massage the uterus through the belly so that you can get that placenta out. And once the placenta comes out, you plop it into a bucket. Who cares? Do whatever you're doing with that. We do a lot of placental donation for like burn victims and whatnot at our hospital, but I don't know what everybody else does. And then you take the uterus and you pull it up out of that incision.
Whoa.
Depending on the doc that you are. Some people like to close the uterus on the inside of the belly. Some people like to pull it out of the belly so you can get better visualization and close it on the outside of the belly. So it depends on what kind of surgeon you are. If you're a thin person, I'll close it on the outside. If you're a heavier person, I'll leave it on the inside.
So what does this uterus feel like?
Well, you hope it feels like a firm tennis ball. If it feels like a floppy ass sponge, it's effing bleeding. And so that's not good. It's called atony. You want, once the placenta comes out, for it to firm up and contract that muscle down. The anesthesia is probably putting Pitocin or something through your IV to try to help your uterus clamp down. So you hope it clamps down. If it doesn't and it's floppy, that's not good. And you're bleeding and bleeding and bleeding and bleeding and bleeding. So you got to learn to stitch fast. So once you get your uterus out, it's spongy. And you massage it, massage it, massage it, massage it. So if I'm standing on the right side of the patient. My left hand will hold onto the uterus while my right hand is stitching. Does that make sense?
Oh my God.
My right hand, or my assistant will pull the uterus back so that my right hand can stitch, but we're literally looking at your uterus. And once the baby's out, it's probably 15 centimeters big. That's it.
Oh my God. It shrinks that much that quickly?
I mean, bam, immediately shrunk.
That's
way
incredible.
Below your belly button, 2-3 centimeters below your belly button is how big it is.
What?
And again, you're,
So you're using sutures that will dissolve?
Yes, ma'am. There's okay. No permanent suture whatsoever used in a C-section at all, ever.
Okay.
So you pull it out. Now, the things that can be injured whenever you're stitching this up, the things, when the baby's head comes out, there's huge blood vessels that are on the sides of your uterus, they're your uterine vessels. If the baby's head was not too big, if the patient hadn't pushed for a really long time, it didn't stretch into those vessels, your incision should be just in the front of your lower uterine segment. It should go across the entire length of your lower uterine segment. And you won't have a lot of bleeding. It'll look like a big ass fish mouth, like a big bass. I'm from the country. My husband fishes like a big effing largemouth bass mouth. Like two big bass lips. And then you'll look down there and you'll see the bladder that has been non-accosted because you use your little bladder blade. About half a centimeter above that, you'll see the opening of the bottom lip of the incision. And then the top lip of the incision will be right above it. And you're holding on to the body of the uterus with your other hand.
Oh my God.
You take dissolvable suture and you go to the corner away from yourself of the big fish mouth. And you go stitch, stitch, stitch. And you basically close the whole thing.
Okay.
And then you tie it off. And then you put a second layer in there. Stitch, 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 and close it. Now, again, this is where I say, fuck me. That was a beautiful uterine incision. That was awesome. But nobody gives a shit about that, okay? But I, myself, being as type A as I am, I'm like, I mean, the spacing on that was gorgeous, Davis. Like, I talk to myself. Yes, I do. Nobody cares. Okay.
Man, do you have pictures of this?
Oh my gosh, yeah, all kind of pictures.
Can you see?
You can look
a
up
picture?
A C-section on YouTube and look at 1,000 of them.
Okay, so I can just find this easily.
Oh, easily. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So okay. You stitch all that up, and then you have to make sure that the fallopian tubes and ovaries aren't bleeding. So you look at them, they should be fine. You take a wet, moist towel and you clean out any blood clots or leftover baby poop or fluid from behind the uterus. You look on the sides of it, it's not bleeding. This is best case scenario. You're like, nice, nice. Then you take the abdominal wall, because think about it, this big fat, well, about 15 centimeter uterus now is outside and it's sitting on top of your abdomen, right? It's on top of your skin, of your abdomen, because I pulled it out of that incision. You get what I mean?
Yeah, and so all the amniotic fluid was just everywhere?
It went into the bag, like we have a drape, and it just goes into the bag and then we suck it up. Yep, it's out. Gushes out if there's a lot of it, or a little bit of it if there's only a little bit of it. But yep, that's all out. All that's done. Placenta's out. Cord's all in a bucket. Baby's over with mom. Skin to skin in. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then you're holding onto this uterus. It's all closed up and looks pretty and it's not bleeding and hopefully it's firm like a tennis ball. Nobody's bleeding. Everybody's laughing, listening to Bruno Mars. Great, great. This is great. Then you take your hand and you grab the end or the edge of your abdominal wall and you lift it straight up. And it should come all the way up because the baby was just in there, right?
Mm-hmm.
You take that uterus, you twist it a quarter turn and go and plop it back into your belly.
Oh, my God.
And it just goes, I say, mama, you're going to feel some pressure. And you plop it back in there. Now, pulling up on that peritoneum like that, and putting that uterus back in there usually causes people a little bit of nausea, but that's just typical. And people get nauseated with their spinal. So sometimes people are throwing up at this time. Their bowels are squirting out of the incision because they're throwing up. And you're like, oh man, gotta wait because you can't stitch somebody's bowel in the way. But then you look at your uterine incision again. If it looks great, you're like, okay, that's awesome. And then you literally don't close the peritoneum. It closes on its own.
Okay.
The muscle, you never cut it. So I didn't have to do anything to it. I'm staring at my fascia, which is that white styrofoam, right?
Okay.
I stitch that layer shut. I'm looking at the fat layer. It's either a lot of fat layer or not a lot of fat layer. If it's a lot of fat layer, I got to close that. If it's not a lot of fat layer, I don't. I use my little electric cautery to make sure that nobody's bleeding, no little bleeders are in that space. And then we close the skin with either stitches or staples. And that's it.
Oh my God.
And you're like, huh, Yeah, and when you close the skin with staples or stitches, by the way, if you've had a prior cesarean section before, your skin where we cut it has a scar in it. So sometimes putting stitches that are dissolvable under the skin doesn't come together as nicely as the staples do. It doesn't cosmetically look as nice because the tissue is not virginal tissue that we cut through. It just depends. Like some people have a bad keloid and some people don't. So your doc might determine whether or not you get stitches or staples based on what your skin looked like when they cut it open if you had a prior scar. If you did not have a prior scar, if this is your very first C-section, almost universally you're going to get closed with stitches under the skin that will dissolve.
Okay. Okay, my mouth is open. Because I'm also trying to figure out how you do the first half of this in 1 minute.
Okay, so the first half of this in an emergency is, this is how it goes. So I just had this yesterday. So I was talking, and that's the thing about labor and delivery. Everything's fine till it isn't, right?
Right.
So somebody came in for an induction. It was her first baby. And the baby looked fine on the monitor. Everything was great. Blah, blah, blah. She broke her water on her own. Blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden, that heart rate went to the 60s and then back up for a minute. And then when she'd have a contraction, it'd go to the 60s and then back up. And she'd have another contraction to the 60s and then go back. Like, what is going on? So there was either cord compression when she broke her water, right? So there was no longer room inside that belly. So when she would contract, the cord was like caught on a shoulder or a tight nuchal cord or something was compressing that cord every time she had a contraction. So her heart tones would go down to the 60s. Well, everybody was laughing and giggling and thinking it was great until it wasn't, right? We have a baby in the 60s. It would come back up and recover, but it'll do that enough times until it just doesn't, right? So I go in there, check her, have the conversation. Hey, sis, like something's going on. We're gonna try to put some more fluid back in there. If that doesn't work, we might have to go for a C-section. You're only 3 centimeters. You never had a baby through your pelvis before, so you don't have a double peer. It's called a proven pelvis. I love me a double peer. I'm like, you got a proven pelvis? Yes, I know a baby can come out of there. Oh. This was not the case. I don't know for sure it can, which means how long are you gonna push? Could you fit a baby out? Anyway, just a whole lot of variables that make you less likely to tolerate a bad baby strip, right? So all of a sudden I go out to the desk to go get her consent so that I could sign it in case. And I turned around, the baby's heart rate was in the 30s.
Wow.
Effing 30s. I was like, mother of God. So what happens then? Everything was fine till it wasn't. All of us, I mean, probably 6 nurses, myself, run into the room. We start snatching all the cords out of the wall. We tell the dad and the grandma, go stand over there. Nobody has time for this conversation, right? Like we're in the 30s. So we grab all of this stuff out of the wall. We slam the door open. We run down the hallway with this patient, toss her directly onto the operating room table. We call it a splash and dash, which is you just take a bottle of betadine and throw it on the person's belly. We don't have time to do the whole 3-minute prep.
Wow.
We're doing all this nice stuff. It's a splash and dash. A splash and dash, you open up this section kit. All I need when there's a crash section is a scalpel blade and a bladder blade. And I tell everybody, do not touch this field or I'll cut them. My job is to get this baby out that quick. So you're not allowed to touch my field. I don't get help. I do it all myself for 60 seconds. Then you do only everything with a scalpel. So anesthesia ran in there. We threw her up on the table. I threw the drape on her. They said the code word, which was once she was crying, being a hot mess, and I would have been a hot mess too. And I was trying to talk to her. I know, mama, we're going to take good care of you. Somebody save my baby. What's going on? Like it was so traumatic for her and I feel for that person, but at that moment we just have to do it, right? Mm-hmm. So anesthesia comes, puts the propofol through her IV, uses the word cut. I take the scalpel blade, make a very intentional incision, because I should know after 20 years how deep her fat layer is, right? So in one swipe, I'm gonna take my scalpel, I go through skin and fat to the fascia. I see that white fascia, I nick it in two places and I take my 2 index fingers and just rip her fascia open sideways.
Wow.
I take my index finger and I shove it in the middle of her rectus. I shove it straight up so that I don't go to her bladder. Once I get inside the peritoneum, I rip down. I open the hole myself with a big tug. I take the bladder blade because the only thing on the field is my knife and my bladder blade and nobody's allowed to touch it because I have cut people. I said, do not touch my field. And then I take the bladder blade, I put it in there. They put their hand on the handle of the hoe. I slice, slice, slice into the uterus. I take my finger and shove it into the uterus, open it, and pop my baby's head out. All that I did yesterday in 37 seconds.
Wow.
somebody has to count because we have to know how long was this baby down so that we can tell the nursery, right? And the pediatrician and how long, like we have to do it on the second. So my team counts for me every five. They'll say 5, 10, 15, 20 so that I can hear in my mind how long has my baby been down and how long has this anesthesia been in the system. So
that does that stress you out or is that a good thing? Like
to hear it?
Yeah.
I want to, it's good for me. So I know where I'm at. Like if it's been 60, like you can't take 4 minutes getting a baby out in a crash. Like that's just like unacceptable. Like you just can't do that. Now, if somebody, let's say you, that's for somebody who was 3 centimeters and that baby's head is all the way up high, almost like a scheduled section. If somebody had been pushing for a really long time and that baby's head is wedged all the way down in the vagina, and then you try to go get that baby out, that's a whole different ball game. And that is way more difficult. And that is very stressful, but it's too bad. That's my job. That's what I get paid to do. But as soon as that baby comes out, somebody go tell the family that the baby's okay. As soon as the baby's out, just go tell them it's okay.
Okay.
And then they're in there, of course, bawling. But
so in the case where the woman has pushed for a long time and go to C-section, because this happens so much, right? How are you getting, are you just pushing, you bring your hand there and bringing the head from bottom up and then like.
I know, right?
Forward and up?
So it depends on where the head is. If it's really, really low, you should probably use a vacuum to try to get it out from below because you're going to rip the shit out of somebody's vagina. Second is if you've been pushing for 3 hours, the amount of blood vessels and distension and edema and swelling that's in the lower uterine segment, that it's just so much more difficult to go do a section like that with all those engorged blood vessels that are down there. And the tissue is so friable. It tears so easy. So if they can't make it, they can't get the baby to come out, then I typically from below will put my hand into the vagina and try to push the baby's head up as far as it'll go. There's also some commercial devices, like one's called a fetal pillow. Like you put a little piece of plastic that has a balloon on it that's deflated. You can put that into the vagina and squirt like 30 to 50 cc's of fluid or 60 cc's of fluid to kind of try to elevate the head up. It's never worked for me, so I don't even bother with it. During a C-section, a nurse can manually try to help push the head up also while the doctor's doing the actual C-section, if that makes sense to you. Like from below, like they can frog leg the mom and try to push up underneath the drape. There's a lot of different things to try to do, but the short version is once you get the baby out, it's usually a effing S show in there. Like,
oh God.
It's usually an S show. Like the blood vessels are, the bleeding amount is so much more. The uterus doesn't typically contract nearly as well because you've been either contracting on your own or on Pitocin for a really long time. So those receptors are really saturated and it doesn't respond to the medication as well. But really the blood vessels on the sides of people's uterus are as big as your pinky finger. And so when you go to try to get that head out, you are basically going beyond the bladder from inside the uterus and going into the vagina to try to cup around that baby's head and pull that head all the way back up into your incision and then pop the head out that way. And by doing that, the fulcrum of your wrist, like the tissue of the uterus is so friable, it won't tolerate it as well and it just tears. So you could be looking at an extensive, extensive repair for somebody and lose a lot of blood during a section, which is why we always ask somebody, you know, do you have religious, you know, issues where we can't give you blood if you were to need it? Are you okay with a blood transfusion? Like that's why somebody's asking all of those questions. And we make sure that what's their starting H&H, like where that's why people are really sensitive about making sure you take your iron and your prenatal vitamins, just in case you would have a situation where you're bleeding really bad.
Okay.
But yeah.
Janae.
Yes, ma'am.
First of all, welcome to 2022 listeners, because this is the first thing we're doing this year. I wanted you.
Yeah, let's do it.
To open season two, because
yeah, I can't wait.
You are a fireball. But Janae, I've been doing this for like a year already, and every time I go into, not every day, I go into these conversations thinking it's going to be like just another conversation about having babies, and I'm always wrong, because like my mouth is open.
It's no joke. It is no joke. And I personally think of it like, wow, like what a blessing that I had the opportunity to do that. People are like, please be clear, because they probably say it to you, the things that you think are like the simplest moves that you might do, people are like, oh my God, it was this death-defying thing that she did up there. When you do it every day and you know, like, this really wasn't that bad. And then there's some that you know are like, no, this was a really tough move that I did that I really could have hurt myself. Like, a lot of lay people don't know the difference between those because it all looks really spectacular, right? Because nobody knows how to do that on a daily basis. That's exactly what it is for us. I have had so many people give me, oh my God, she saved my baby's life. Oh my God, did you Notre Dame? She saved my baby. And I really didn't. Like, okay, I did a few maneuvers. I turned the baby a certain way. I used a vacuum. I did something that was routine bread and butter. Right? It wasn't a big deal to me because that's what I was trained to do. But there are those cases, i.e. my baby's heart rate is in the 30s. Yes, I saved a life that day. So I can go home feeling okay about that. That's definitely a dead baby if you weren't at a hospital or you were, you know, I don't know, 150 years ago, just doing a home birth or something, you know, and nobody even knew that the heart tones were down. Like, those babies are definitely dead babies. Whereas we were given the opportunity to participate with a mom in a way that was literally life-changing. And I'm so grateful for those opportunities. So when I have those situations, even when I'm tired or even when I'm, you know, frustrated with my job, I'm like, no, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And then it makes me feel like, you know, it's a validation that I don't get in a lot of other areas of my life. So,
Janae,
yeah, there's a lot of stuff that people think was a big deal that really wasn't. Or I almost bled to death. Oh my God, there's blood everywhere. Girl, we put boots on for every delivery. You're supposed to bleed a lot. Your body, your physiology makes 50% more blood volume when you get pregnant in anticipation that you lose at least half a liter of blood during a vaginal delivery. So even though it looks bad, it looks like a murder scene, we put boots on while we're laughing because we just don't want blood splattered all the way up to our knees because we know this is going to happen. That's supposed to happen. You weren't bleeding to death. People, though, that really are possibly bleeding to death, that's when it's really like, mother of God, thank God this team effort was, you know, anesthesia was where they needed to be, and we were where we needed to be, and we could put the extra IV and get the blood bank going and stat, all that TV stat stuff. Like that, yeah, we're serious.
Dr. Janae, hey, roughly how many C-sections have you performed? Do you know?
Oh, thousands.
Wow.
In my residency, I think the most I did in one day was 8. I think in residency, I did 8 sections in one day.
8?
8 in one day. Everybody gets their training, their residency training. Not everybody, but I was at a level 3 hospital. So we did quadruplets. We did all the heart defects. We did all the bad stuff. Like, it all got sent to us. So we were super, super busy. And I didn't have any fellows. And the fellows are the high-risk training doctors, like the doctors who training to be high-risk, but they didn't have any at my hospital, so we did all of it. And I'm really grateful for that experience, too, because a lot of people don't have the opportunity to. They can watch people do it, but they don't get to actually do it, and I got to do it. So, yeah, you were just, yeah, I think 8 was my most C-sections in one day. And I hate to say it because it hurts my feelings a little bit. I don't say it hurts my feelings. It makes me recognize how tired I am sometimes. I don't remember if I delivered certain people's babies or not. Like, I'll see them at the store and they'll be like, remember this happened? I'm like, I honest to God don't. I think it was probably 3 in the morning. I don't know. Like, I just had 8 babies in the past 2 days. I was on call Thursday and Friday. I had 8 babies. Yeah, and I'm just, yeah, I woke up from my nap like, mother blanker, what happened? Like, I didn't sleep for 2 days. Like, I don't know what happened. I don't know. I know we saved a life, though, because that heart rate in the 30s got my sphincter a little bit tight, sister. That's why I say sphincter's tight, ladies. Sphincter's tight.
Oh, my God, Janae, I knew I was going to be obsessed with you forever, and I definitely...
Yes.
I am. What was your experience, by the way, listening to yourself on the podcast?
What happened?
What was your experience listening to yourself on the podcast?
I talk way too fast for any normal person to listen to.
No,
that's the first thing.
No.
Yes. It was odd. It was, I don't know what to say about it. I think I talk so much all day, every day anyway, that I told my mom, like this job is like going to work and talking to my girlfriends all day. Like, I really do love the relationship I have with my patients. Like, I just love it. So thinking about talking to you guys about my life is the same as I talk to my patients about my life, because I feel like they are my life. Like, there's nothing but transparency that comes from me, because I think that's what makes me stay humble and stay connected with my patients. So it was like, wow, who wants to listen to all this shenanigans about whatever I was saying? Because I just... always saying something. I don't know. No. My little 11-year-old got a little notebook and she was like, Mom, I'm writing down your sayings. I said, what was the last thing I said that you wrote down? She said, let me get my notebook. And it said, does this need to be said? Does this need to be said by me? And does this need to be said by me right now? And she wrote that down and she walked around saying, because I'm like, does this need to be said? Need to be said right now? So, yeah.
Oh, my God. Around,
spewing out stuff all day about random stuff.
But the, like, me and Kelly want you in on the episode for, like, talking all about good sex. Dr. Janae, I'm sorry. I think I'm just going to call you that because I can't stop. You can just call me Janae. You're like, you're amazing.
No, I can't wait to do it. But I want you to, I'm happy to record again whenever. This is really, like, really nice for me. Like, oh, talking about my gig. Yeah, I can do that. Like, it's just a matter of hooking the time up. But you're totally not bothering me. I enjoy it.
Oh my goodness, this woman is a firecracker. Thank you, Janae, for giving us all your time. Last week's pod, this week's encore, just like so much Janae, and it's just so good. So, all right, guys. Yeah, thank you for being here. And Bina's singing in the back. If you can hear her little voice, she is listening to her music and just singing, and I'm just going to let her do it. If you guys are excited for 2023 Silks Level 1 Teacher Training, just go to the show notes and let me know that you're interested by clicking the link. If you're into or needing aerial rehab, that free 3-part video series is available to you. Click the link. And then, of course, our virtual 60-minute live rolled out classes for your physical and mental health. We get on the floor, get down and dirty with those foam rollers and balls and make it feel just a little bit better every single week. All right, guys, thank you so much to Asa Watkins, sound engineer, baby daddy, and amazing partner. And if you would honor me with a 5-star rating and a review, it really helps, really, really helps. I appreciate you guys for any effort you put in there. And thank you to the Digident family of podcasts. We love being a part of this this school of fish. We hate being a fish all by ourselves. So anyways, guys, have an amazing week. I'll see you guys next time. This is the Expecting Your Best.